Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with 3 practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Melanie Pritchard. Melanie has more than 30 years' experience working in early years and has been Quality and Standards Manager at the Early Years Alliance for 15 years. Melanie's role is both diverse and extremely fulfilling as she supports early years educators to achieve and maintain the best possible outcomes for young children. And Melanie and I today are talking about food refusal and avoided eating. Enjoy the episode. Hi Melanie, how are you?
Hi Claire, lovely to meet you. Yes, I'm fine, thank you, on this lovely sunny day.
Oh, I don't know where you're based. I didn't ask you just now, but I'm in Devon. I'd say it's, I actually had a jumper on earlier, so.
Well, I'm in the Cotswolds, so I'm kind of in the middle there, and yeah, it's the sun's shining at the moment, so that's good enough for me.
Well, that is good enough for everyone, hopefully. We're recording just into late July, and we're talking today about a topic that I was saying off air that I've been really trying to get someone on board to talk about. So I'm really glad that the Early Years Alliance could help us with this. So we're talking about the topic of helping children in the early years to eat well. Before we go off and, you know, get to the nitty gritty of the topic, well, how about a book recommendation on the topic, Melanie?
Okay, well, this book is actually written by somebody that I've worked very closely with over the years, Dr. Gillian Harris, and a colleague of hers, Elizabeth Shea. And the book's called Food Refusal and Avoidant Eating in Children. Now, that might sound like you're going straight to the problem, but actually, the way that Gillian and Elizabeth have put this book together is really helpful for any parent, because they talk about their own experiences as parents, and they talk about the fact that every child is different, you know, and they touch on what's usual, what's normal, and also go to the other end of the scale as well. So it says it's a practical guide for parents and professionals. And yeah, I think it really is. And it's an easy read as well, Claire.
I think that is key when we're busy professionals or parents, carers, to have something that's easily digestible, excuse the pun already. No, that sounds great. And what we do is that we'll pop that in the episode notes so those listening can have a click on it. Tell me a bit more about your experience, Melanie, with this topic.
Okay, so the first thing I'll say is I'm not a dietitian. I am an associate director of an organisation called the Infant and Toddler Forum, and I work for the Early Years Alliance. And I've worked with Early Years for the past 30 years now, surprisingly. And in all that time, things have changed so much. The importance now that we put on diet and nutrition, on healthy eating, and actually supporting children and parents to make good choices. And so over the years, I've seen our role in early years change as we become more that portal of information. You know, we're seen as that safe source of information for parents as well. And so, yes, so really over the years, I've amassed a great deal of experience and I suppose I'll say expertise as well about what healthy eating is and how to support parents and children.
I think you're well on your way, 30 years of experience, to have excellent expertise in the area. And I'm really interested in this topic because I know there's going to be a huge spectrum of differences of what someone wants to eat, what eating well even looks like. So one family to the next might have a different perception of what eating well is. So I wondered if we could start with that idea of, from your experience, what is eating well in the early years? What does that consist of? What do they need?
Yeah, I think it's a real challenge, isn't it? Because parents want the very best for their children. They want to make sure they're getting it right. But information changes as well about, you know, there's the emphasis on breastfeeding and not using formula milk. You know, parents feel under a lot of pressure from the very time they bring their baby home from the hospital. And so I think it's about giving children variety. it's about also more and more we see that parents, because they're trying to do the right thing, they all worry about not giving their child enough to eat.
Mm.
So there's that whole issue of actually, well, my child won't eat vegetables, but they will eat pudding. So at least they're eating something, you know. So really it is about diet. It's about variety. It's about portion sizes and getting those right, because parents have been surveyed on this in the past, you know, what they think is an appropriate portion for, say, a 2-year-old or an 18-month-old. And you can guarantee it's always at least twice more than it actually should be. So that we know about the 5 a day. We know about the importance of eating fruit and vegetables. We know about that balance, you know, and there's plenty. Nurseries in particular, nurseries, preschools, any early years setting will have all that information for you. So please, I would always say to any parent, just have a chat with child's key person and say, okay, so I can see you've got your menu choices up here, but I'm struggling to get my child to eat these things, these lovely things that you seem to be able to get them to eat. What can I do about it? And, you know, they will be able to give you, they will direct you to websites such as the Infant and Toddler Forum website. They will direct you to the information that's out there. Certainly the NHS now makes more information about what constitutes a healthy diet available to parents.
But I think, Melanie, leading on from those points, I think that some of the issues can be that there is so much information, isn't there? And there's not always good information about eating well. And I've heard things in the media around, you know, toddlers, you know, early years children having really strict and rigid diets based on, you know, someone perhaps reading something and thinking that's going to be best. How do we navigate some of the misinformation? Because it's really tough, isn't it?
It is tough. And, you know, there are more and more children going into early years now with parents expressing those food preferences that they want them to have a vegan diet or a plant-based diet, you know, and so that is a challenge in itself. And early years educators, early years experts will always make sure that they've got that relevant information in front of them. So if you have a child come in that is vegan, that is plant-based, you know, you need to know what constitutes a healthy diet for that child, and you need to provide for that child as well. That's really important. That comes under, you know, the early years foundation stage, which we all have to adhere to in early years, how we provide, taking into consideration food allergies, preferences and intolerances. And it's very, very important that you go out and seek that information. And it is out there. There is so much information. Mm. And like you say, yes, some of it is really hard to navigate. But on the early years websites, on the DfE website, where we have that information for early years settings, you will find the current and the right information.
And I think that's so important that we're going almost to the horse's mouth. I feel like exactly. I can't stop using food.
Yes, you can. Stop. So many puns, Claire, come to mind.
I know. I don't know what's happened to me. It's because it's the summer holidays. But yeah, it is getting that information from source. And I know personally, if I'm looking up something to do with like supplementation, for example, yes. for myself, I know I'm not early years myself, the NICE guidelines at NHS, that's my point of reference, because I trust it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's it. Go to, like you said, go to the horse's mouth. I always worry when somebody says, well, I've Googled this information, you know, and it comes to me a lot from a variety of subjects that early years have to navigate. Well, I've Googled this, and I thought, well, actually, but that's not the website, is it? That's not the recommended source that you should go to. So always making sure, like I said, NHS would be my first port of call.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking on the other side. So we're thinking about, you know, how do we know how an early years child gets to eat well, but thinking about the flip side, what is the impact on, I'm thinking around behavior maybe,
yes,
of a child that isn't getting those nutrients or that eating well kind of philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing I would say is, you know, that a child who is hungry can't learn, you know, whether that's at nursery or at school. So it does have an impact on their behaviour, on their capacity to learn, on their capacity to concentrate during the day. You know, if you know yourself, if you haven't eaten, we hear that term hangry, don't we, a lot. Something my husband often mentions to me, I think you're a bit hangry. But actually, you know, it's right, isn't it? And children's behaviour, their capacity to manage and regulate their emotions, their capacity to be able to really to concentrate is affected by a poor diet. It really is. And the other thing is as well, don't forget, in this country we do have an obesity crisis. And we're seeing that more and more in early years, and it's significant and it's important, you know, because a child is overweight, it's not just the physical impact of that, but it's the mental impact of that as well, as being the child who's different, the child who can't always join in. So there are huge impacts for not having a good nutritious diet.
Thinking about parents, carers listening, perhaps I'm just thinking around the reasons why the child might not be eating well. What kind of tips could we give to parents, carers to get the right things in? Because I'm thinking back to my, you know, nieces and nephews, they're all cracking on in age a bit, none in the early anymore. And I'm thinking of one nephew in particular, and beige food, like that, you know, absolutely 100% beige food. But my sister-in-law, honestly, the creative ways that she got the vegetables in, frozen ice cubes, frozen smoothies, like just really creative ways of getting that food in. But what are some of the ways that we can help? Because it's not coming always from a bad place, is it? It's coming from a place of I don't know what else to do now.
Okay. I mean, the first thing that I would start with there is that actually it's totally normal part of development for toddlers especially to become fussy and fatty eaters for a time, because they're still experimenting, they're still developing their preferences for certain foods. And so, you know, every child might go through a period of that beige foods or whatever. And generally speaking, I think if long as they get the opportunity to try different foods. I'm of a generation where my grandparents in particular would not let me leave the table until I'd finished everything on my plate, because wasting food was seen as a crime in itself. And that stems back from obviously food shortages and rationing during the war. And so really giving children time and letting them experiment with their food, letting them refuse certain foods, you know, but always trying new things. Letting children help you to prepare their foods in the first place, especially in early years. We do this a lot, helping at snack time. And then the other thing that we do a lot in early years as well is actually letting children grow their own food.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more exciting than seeing something that you've planted as a seed, that you've watered, that has grown and ripened, and then actually being given a real knife, not a sharp knife, but a real knife, and being allowed to cut into it and prepare it to eat for yourselves. And your children are more likely to want to try that because they feel some ownership. It's not something that's been put in front of them that they look at and think, oh my goodness, what's this now? What am I got to eat now? But something actually that they know and understand and makes them curious.
So it's like bringing that curiosity, that excitement into food. So it's, and I suppose this might relate into other cultures where it's like the whole package, isn't it, eating? Yes. It's not just putting it into our bodies. It's the preparation. It's the fun around it, the play and opportunities to play.
Definitely. There is so much that goes along, especially like you said, in different cultures about the behaviours around food and what leads up to that. And it's really important that children get to experience that where they can as well. And it's not tokenistic either, because it's all part of introducing children to that wider world and making them sort of feel that actually food is important, it's special. And it's not just something, because what we tend to do as parents, and we do it for ourselves as well as adults, I know, is, you know, well, I'm feeling miserable, therefore I'm going to go and treat myself to a jam donut or a burger or, you know, something. So we tend to think of food in certain ways, that certain foods are a treat, certain foods are forbidden, you know, and certain foods are just boring. But actually, when we think about food more broadly, actually, it is about the diversity in food as well, and trying different things. So it's really important.
It is so important. It helps us to live, to, you know, to breathe and to function in the world. It's, you know, it's there. And I think it becoming, you know, a reward, or, you know, it's bad. It's such a binary way of thinking about things, isn't it? And I guess I'm wondering on that lines, that where does that become, I don't want to use the word normal, Melanie, let's not use the word normally, but where does it become a problem? So that phase of, you know, wanting beige food and refusing lots of different things, like, when does that start to flip into something, actually, I'm concerned now, this isn't, you know, the path that would usually be taken?
Yeah, and I'm glad you don't use the word normal to talk about that, because, you know, every child is unique. And every child goes through different phases. Some don't go through those phases at all. And some children will always be a little bit picky and a little bit faddy about what they eat. But I would always say, and I've always said to parents on this, but if you're concerned, you know your child best. And if you're concerned, speak to somebody. If your child's in an early years setting, speak to their key person first. Ask if they've noticed that there's a problem. Ask if it is a problem in the first place, you know, and seek help. Don't leave it. Don't let it build into something big, because we often compound these behaviours inadvertently by trying to resolve them ourselves. By saying, well, you know, I'm going to take all the beige food away and you will eat what's on your plate and you will eat when you're hungry. You know, it does happen, doesn't it? So seek help, speak to your early years key person, your child's key person, speak to your health visitor, speak to your GP. Go with your gut. There's another pun. Go with your gut. You know your child. You know what's normal for your child. And yeah, just don't let it become a huge issue.
And I'm thinking about parents, carers listening. I mean, that can be really lonely, that experience, that we know all of these things that we're saying about eating well, balanced diet, you know, the 5 a day. So it must feel quite lonely, where you might see other parents, carers having no issues, you know, whatsoever, in inverted commas, and you're struggling, and it can end up in like quite difficult situations at home, can't it? Having rows at the dinner table, you know, lots of meltdowns we might describe. Is there a way that a parent carer might be able to navigate some of those trickier times at, I don't know, meal times maybe?
Yeah, I think that for a start, sitting down for meals together and establishing that from the outset. So not all of a sudden, if you've always eaten, you know, your tea on a tray in front of the TV, and then suddenly you're dragging your child away from the TV to sit at a table and they've never done it before, is really hard. But I think really being a good role model for your child is hugely important. So sitting down together, taking that time, making meal times a social occasion can really help. Talking about the day, you know, there's so many other things that come into that as well, so that the focus of mealtimes isn't just the food, it's about family time. It's about that time when you're focused on the child. We're all busy, you know, especially beginning and the end of the day. Parents might have been at work themselves. You know, there's 101 things that you have to do when you get home. But making that special time to actually to be together as a family, no phones, no TV, just sitting down at the table together. And I think you're less likely to get those really challenging behaviours. And of course, again, don't forget that your early years setting will be establishing those behaviours as well. So it's about consistency from home to nursery or to preschool. You know, they're used to sitting down together. They're used to mealtimes being a social occasion, usually when their carers are sat with them as well. And so try and follow through with that at home. And again, talk to your child's key person. Well, how do you achieve that? Because I'm struggling with it.
I was just jotting down a couple of notes because it's really linking back to something else that we mentioned. So that idea around mealtimes with the child and family being connected is something, and that the that food isn't shoveling it down, being distracted, it's an experience. And that came up in a previous example, and I want to link this back to an episode that I recorded with Sonia Murray, where she talked about early years and the importance of play. And actually, through lots of the examples that you've given, play is coming out, because it's a form of, you know, being social, you know, whether it's around the dinner table or however we organize ourselves to have our food together, we're playing a bit, aren't we? You know,
yes.
Conversation and lots of learning there. So that was something that really sprung to my mind as you were speaking there. I'm conscious of time because I've been really good recently at finishing the podcast on time. So we're going to conclude with three top tips from you, Melanie.
Oh, my three top tips. Okay, so I think we've covered a couple of them, but just being a good role model to children as well. You know, be the behaviour that you want to see around food. So sitting together and talking, social occasion, being a good role model. Don't use food as a treat or reward. You know, that's the thing that I find so often. Oh, I see you haven't been good at nursery today, therefore you can't have an ice cream on the way home. You know, don't link it to a child's behavior. That's really important. And then being aware of those correct portion sizes as well. Again, little people's plates, if people want to Google that, if you're not sure about portion sizes, just Google little people's plates and just see where you're at with that. And I think a lot of people would be very surprised about what are the right portion size is for their child.
Absolutely, Melanie, such great tips and really, really interesting conversation. And I'm taking away a few bits that I think are really helpful. That idea around play and eating being an experience, I think, is helpful for everyone. But thank you so much for your time today. I hope we get to catch up again soon.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.